Hello, this is Janet Gallen from Love Letters Live, welcoming you to another episode in a visit with an astounding woman. And I'm laughing because we just met recently at a luncheon, and halfway through, I knew that absolutely everything she had to say needed to be shared, and she has been kind enough to come do this with us. I am going to go right to Susie Woodward Morris, who is a fashion, would you say an image consultant?
I would.
Okay.
Image consultant. Or I can say frock star.
Frock star, I like that.
Frock star.
Okay, good. And yes, I just want to go to you. The first thing that you had mentioned, I want you to do this first, if you would, please, share this impossible experience, was when you talked about how you met your first husband and your engagement. So, and I'm already in advance going to say, I hope you come do several of these with me.
I would love to.
Oh, thank you. Start with that.
Okay.
Or start with you. Start with your how you were raised and how many children in your family, and go, girl.
Well, oldest of 10 children. So oldest of 10 children, lots of attitude going with that.
Like what?
Like you get a lot of applause from all the grandparents. So you grow up with attitude. You're the first one that does everything.
You grew up with good attitude.
Exactly.
Oh, because you're the oldest.
Yes, and you everything.
So
you
have everyone to yourself at that point.
You do, and everyone applauds you for everything you do. There are 700 pictures of me sitting on the potty.
Well, it could be that you were so adorable that you brought this applause. I mean, I don't know that everybody gets this.
Well, definitely.
You might have. I think you evoked this all your life.
Maybe.
But go ahead.
The 9 younger ones, though, did not get it. And my youngest sister has 3 pictures taken of her.
Uh-huh. I guess you run out of energy.
You do.
Yes.
So 10 of you.
10
of us.
Mm-hmm. And you had said that, I mean, you are sitting here with this beautiful jet black hair and that beautiful face of yours. And you say that all your siblings were blonde.
They were blonde. So half German, half Irish.
Mm-hmm.
I take out the Irish side.
Yes.
And they got the tan skin and the beautiful blonde hair.
Oh, well, that's nice.
And the mathematical brains.
Oh, okay. And you got the witch brain.
I got, that's it,
the witch brain.
I got the creative brain.
Uh-huh.
Not that they're not creative, they're just not as creative.
Okay, so exactly. Creative to you is visually creative for sure.
It is.
When did that first show up?
Early, very early.
Go ahead.
When I used to dress up in my mother's shoes, they were not shoes, they became gloves.
Uh-huh.
Or they became shoulder pads on a jacket.
Or
they became hats.
And what did you do? You had mentioned earlier what you did with your Catholic school uniform.
Yes, I sewed tutus on the inside, so I had lining on the inside of my uniform.
Oh, you did that yourself?
Which made it reversible.
Uh-huh.
I did some of it myself until I saw that it could look a lot better if someone else helped. So I did have a grandmother who would help me sew animal prints on the inside of my uniform
jacket.
That's
how you got that.
And
so you'd wear it inside out so you didn't have to be one of the pack.
Exactly. And then a lot of my friends asked for my advice. How did I do that? Also, using my mother's pregnancy, she was pregnant every year having that many kids.
Right.
Using the fabric from her maternity clothes, which was stretchy, so that when we would roll our skirts up to make them shorter, mine didn't show any bigger bulk at the waist.
Uh-huh. But they could still see that it was too far above the knees?
No, you could pull it up and wear it like a dress. So you'd pull it up to where your bra was.
Oh, sure.
And then the skirt was short. But you could also pull it down, so it was easier.
So by the time you got to school, you would put your jacket right side out
and
your skirt at the proper length.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. So you were an image consultant right away.
I was.
You were always headed for that. Tell me about meeting your first husband.
So I was working.
And you said that you had gotten a nursing degree. Why don't you talk about that?
Yes. So in college, I went to school to, my father thought you should come out with something important, like a degree in nursing or science or some sort of something you could do when you came out.
So you could earn a living.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So he chose nursing for me because he thought I had a caring personality. But the shoes and the white dresses were not for me.
Yeah, that's right.
So the candy girls, I liked them, the stripes,
yes,
the red and white stripes were good. So anyway, I did go to nursing school at Loretto Heights College and got my degree in that, but psychology was my first love.
So did you ever work as a nurse?
No, but I had to do summer where you go in the summer and you do internships.
Uh-huh.
So you get 90 cents an hour and you work as a nurse emptying bedpans. And I learned that pretty quickly. I thought that was not really very helpful. And I learned that I didn't like it. If somebody was bleeding, I started crying. Or if they were throwing up, I was throwing up. So it was not my calling.
Definitely not. Okay, so how did you make this transition then to what you do?
So on the side, I got elected to a teen board where I became one of the senior girls by the time I was in college. And you take these young girls and you teach them how to walk and talk and do all that.
So you had started this before your nursing.
Exactly. So that was in high school. But then you get to, as you go into college, you get to be in the senior part, which is a bigger deal. And you actually get paid for it. And then from there, I went to John Robert Powers. And John Robert Powers was called Goldstone Powers in Denver at the time.
That's where you were raised, Denver?
It is where I was raised. And at Goldstone Powers, it was an agency. So companies would come and they would do, at that time, fashion shows were big lunchtime fundraising opportunities. So we were the models that would be at the spouse shows for conventions, and Denver had a lot of conventions.
And spouse shows meant, of course, for the women then.
For the women, exactly. And it would be Newsteaders, which was the store they would use at the time. And if we weren't doing our perfume modeling, which was running around trying to get people to buy perfume, you could do runway. So the day I met my husband, I was one of the runway models.
And how old were you at this point?
I think I was 23, around 23.
Now, I'm just curious, because were you dating anybody at this time? Or?
Yes, I was. Absolutely.
Okay.
Several people.
Okay.
So no special person.
Okay, so you weren't like hooked to somebody and you were single. And,
right. And so what I did was the man I was working with, this was Marion Power Shovel was the name of the company. They were from Ohio. And the man who I worked with to select the models and the clothes, et cetera, and the theme for the day fell over dead the night before the fashion show. So the man who ended up being my husband came, he was told by the company that you need to go over and take care of this spouse fashion show.
Now, why was he chosen to do that? Who
was
he?
Because he happened to be available and he was in marketing and PR for the company.
Oh, for the same company?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was. So they sent him also because he was very charming and they knew he'd enjoy the process. And so he shrugged a little bit, but he came, and the first person he had to talk to was me. And the first thing he said is, can you have coffee afterwards? And I said, no, we don't do that. And he said, you mean you don't drink coffee or you're not allowed to go out with men? And I said, both. So he said, okay. So I did the fashion show, and at the end of the runway, he was standing there with all the photographers. And every time I walked down the runway, he'd tell them to take another picture of me.
Still the most popular photograph.
Still really fun. So after it was over with and everybody was cleaning up and I was getting the clothes back to Newsteaders for the people picking them up, he came and told me that he was going to take me for coffee. He said, there are bright lights at the Brown Palace.
What does that mean?
It means that they have the lights on. They didn't have Starbucks in those days.
Oh, that was the name of the place, the Brown Palace.
Brown Palace Hotel had a coffee shop.
I see.
An old-fashioned hotel coffee shop with lights on. But not like Starbucks. You could actually have lunch in there. You could have food, etc. So he said, it's just coffee. It's 1 half hour. He said, don't worry about it. There are lots of people there. I just looked. There are about 50 people in there.
So he didn't want you to be intimidated.
No.
That's so nice.
So I went. I thought he was kind of cute. That's the real reason I went. And he was not only cute, he was totally charming. And so for 6 hours, we sat in the coffee shop and talked.
6 hour coffee date for a first date.
Exactly. And he told me I can't date.
What did you talk about for 6 hours?
We talked about our lives. He said, he said, I am a divorced man with 4 kids and a grandson, so I can't date. So this is our first date. And I said, I was afraid of that. And I told him I was from a big family and my mother was not going to be happy about this. And I said, well, when you don't date, where do you live? He said, Palo Alto, California. And I have been mayor of Palo Alto, California. I said, okay, are you still mayor? He said, no. I said, good, because I'm not into political romances. And he liked that. We talked about his kids. He showed me pictures of his kids. He was very proud of his kids. His daughter and I were only two years apart in age. That mm-hmm. frightened me a tiny bit. Mm-hmm. But I figured since I was the oldest of 10 kids, four kids was no big deal. Mm-hmm. And a grandson would be just an added plus. So he said, okay, so I'm going to propose to you tomorrow morning. I'm going to let you sleep on it. Uh-huh. So I went home and told my mother I just met the man I was going to marry. And she said, no, you haven't. I said, yes, I have. She said, no, you haven't. And I said, yes, I have. The next morning, he rang the doorbell with 100 yellow roses and a diamond ring.
And so your mother was there for this?
She was there for that, and she said that this is not going to happen. And
even faced with him, charming, yes. And as he
she
was.
He said, well, I'm going to give her a ticket so she can meet my kids. And
a ticket to fly to Palo Alto?
To fly to Palo Alto, mm-hmm. exactly. Fly to San Francisco, mm-hmm. which, of course, made me very mm-hmm. excited. So anyway, after he left, because he had a plane to catch, I was in big trouble at home. But it didn't bother me. I'd been there before.
Yeah, I could tell right away when we first met that you weren't easily intimidable. But
no.
What did your mother say? And I mean, what was the conversation like?
She just assumed that I was
insane.
You know, yes, insane was probably the nicest thing you could think of that she was thinking.
What do you think she was thinking? I mean, this is not good news for a daughter to come home and say, "I met a man last night, and this morning we're engaged." I mean,
right? No. And also she thought he's very charming, but you know, when you move into a house with a man who's been married before with four kids, it's not going to be an easy life. Mm-hmm. She said, I'd had different plans for you.
What were her plans for you?
Her plans for me were to be admitted into junior league, which I already had been, mm-hmm. to marry I won't name him, but mm-hmm. a specific person whose father was in the oil business. Mm-hmm. And who was not the least bit interested in me.
Yeah.
it was not going to ever happen, uh-huh. and I was not the least bit interested uh-huh. in him. And we had known each other since grade school, and it just was not a love match at all. So it was not something that would work out.
Are you still friendly with that person?
I don't know what's happened to him, really. I'm sure he's very happy with however many wives he's had, and I'm sure there were more than one.
Okay.
And so I was, you know, I knew that I was in love with Bert. I could not stop myself from that feeling. Mm-hmm. So I took the flight mm-hmm. a week later, flew to Palo Alto, and of course Bert met me. And the fun part of the story is I had gold lame heels that were at least 6 inches tall that I'd never walked in before. Uh-huh. And I thought, I totally looked like the kind of girl that would do what I was doing. Red dress, gold lame, high heels. When he saw me get off the plane, he said, "What happened to the other girl I saw back in Denver?"
Oh, the more demure one.
Yes, uh-huh. exactly. Well, just the one that was, you know, more normal looking.
Yes.
Because I did not look like he was greeting the mother of, the future mother of his kids. Uh-huh. So anyway,
what did you tell him you had done with the other girl?
I told him she was in disguise.
Okay.
So anyway, he took me to Julius's castle.
Oh, nice.
For dinner, of course. What girl wouldn't want, you know, to stay there forever? So, and then he drove me down to Ricky's Hyatt house, checked me into a hotel room, and went home, mm-hmm. which was perfectly appropriate. I was a little bit disappointed, but I thought mm-hmm. it was nice. Mm-hmm. And the next day he picked me up and took me to breakfast, to have breakfast with his kids, to meet his kids. They were not happy to see me.
Oh, is that right? What were you wearing?
I was wearing jeans and, you know, a sweatshirt top.
Okay, so you didn't look like Daisy May out for an evening.
I tried not to the next day. So he was perfectly happy with what I was wearing for that day because it was just a casual breakfast. They were then going off to school.
How old were they?
They were, so Becky was, at the time, she must have been 21, 22.
Oh, grown. Oh, you said
yes.
just the
yes.
close
she
to your age, right?
She was 2 years difference from me in age.
I forgot that.
And then the youngest was Tom, who was 10. Mm-hmm. And he...
Now, had he raised them? I mean, who was still
living with
him?
He had raised them. Uh-huh. Yeah, so their mother had left quite a while before that. And so Bert was raising them. He was a marvelous cook. fantastic. That was a plus I didn't know about. Mm-hmm. Breakfast was the best breakfast I think I'd ever had. Mm-hmm. And even my mother would admit when she finally agreed to come and see us after we were married, his breakfast was divine.
Oh, okay. So the children were not happy to see you because?
Because it meant that their mother was probably not coming back.
Oh, how long have they been separated or divorced?
A long mm-hmm. time, about 4 or 5 years.
Okay. But they still had hopes, sure.
They had hopes, yeah. Of course, they wanted to, you know, kids always want mm-hmm. the original thing back.
Sure.
So I was sort of the end of that chapter. And also, I wasn't what they expected. They were looking for a gray-haired lady who made cookies.
Uh-huh.
And I was...
Neither?
I could be gray-haired if I wanted to, but I would have had to buy it.
Yes, okay.
And I could have done that. I didn't do it at the time. And I thought I could learn to make cookies.
Mm-hmm.
But
did you?
No. but I knew how to buy really good cookies.
Good, okay.
And Palo Alto had a lot of bakers.
So how long did it take for you to get on a good standing with his children?
Well, that took about 6 months.
Oh, that's
I would
bad.
Say about six okay. months. We were married, however, in about 3 weeks.
Of course.
Because Bert said, we might as well not delay this. Let's just get married.
Surprised you waited that long.
Yeah, well,
so
I did have to go back to Denver and
pack
my
up.
Clothes
yes,
and pack
okay.
up and, you know.
So you didn't just stay there in that room.
Exactly.
Oh, now, who married you and you did this without your family there?
We went to Carmel to the mission there and got married there. I could not get married as a Catholic because Bert was divorced.
Oh,
mm-hmm. So we went to do the official wedding was in Las Vegas, which was very exciting to me. It was like being a movie star.
Uh-huh.
So we went there, and then we went to do what I wanted to have sort of a semi-religious ceremony. We went to the Carmel Mission and got...
So you could have the feel of it.
We could have the feel of it. And we had really no one there, just the two of us. Mm-hmm. And... which was fine. And then they mm-hmm. had other people there,
hired guests.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that way I also got to wear two wedding outfits.
Of course.
So one was a pantsuit. In those days, pantsuits were very good. And I found a silk pantsuit, which was divine.
Mm-hmm.
And the other was a beautiful dress. So not the typical long dress. So, you know, that was okay. I got over it.
Okay.
And working with the kids, you know, I learned from my grandfather who had been, my grandmother passed away and my grandfather married a young woman and she came in and the first thing she did was throw away all the family pictures.
Oh my.
Get rid of all, she sold off all the china and silver, etc. And my mother was horrified.
Mm-hmm.
And so I learned from her, although I loved her as a person, she was not a good person in relationships with stepchildren.
Yes.
She figured if my mother was married, she didn't need new china or new photos. So I learned, I called my new stepdaughter, Becky, and told her to come and take whatever she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so I left the house for a day. She brought a moving van to the house. And when I came back, almost everything was gone.
Uh-huh.
Which was fine with me. I was okay. But Bert had a heart attack.
Oh.
He said, where is my coffee pot?
Oh.
This was, I think,
because
a 12,
these were his things
this
also.
This was a $12 coffee pot.
Yes.
He was most upset about the coffee pot. I don't think she took it. I think she just thought it was old and crummy and she threw it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never asked.
But in an attempt to take everything that was her mother's.
Yes, and
with
I knew
uh-huh.
I trusted Becky also to distribute these things with her brothers mm. as they got older and got married,
uh-huh.
and which she absolutely did, and to this day is still doing that. So I had a lot of respect for her,
mm-hmm.
but he was unhappy about it. He did not like that I was giving away things
mm-hmm.
that were also his. I told him, for the future, this is a small thing. We can buy new sheets. We can buy, you know, the closets are empty. She really saved us a lot of trouble.
Well, an empty closet for you was just an invitation.
Really important.
My goodness.
Really
yeah.
important. So it was one of those bittersweet moments
mm-hmm.
where I thought I was doing the right thing. Becky thought I was doing the right thing. And
mm-hmm.
Bert was not terribly happy about it, but he did get over it.
Okay.
And it gave me a chance to decorate.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you know,
and
I enjoy.
To make it yours.
Exactly.
With
make
him.
It mine.
Mm-hmm.
But that was also difficult for the kids. I think I did it too fast.
Uh-huh.
It might have been a good idea to stay there for a couple of months before I did that. But I got them into the, and I learned how to paint walls, which was really scary.
Oh, you did it yourself?
Yes. Yes. I didn't know how to hire yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I painted, I remember Tom was a boy, so he should have a blue room. It was the bluest room mm-hmm. you ever saw. Blue rug, blue bedspread, blue walls.
And how old he was 10 then?
He was 10 at the time mm-hmm. and horrified. He was afraid people would see his blue room. So we worked on that later. He actually helped me paint it. He said, I do have to go to school tomorrow. So it was that kind of situation. I think I was taking out a lot of the, you know, in a perfect world, how would you make this great for the kids
mm-hmm.
and make them feel like this is all new and different and this is the beginning of something exciting.
How did you get that across?
Well, they could feel that something was definitely changing. But the fact that it was changing so fast, I think, mm-hmm. was difficult for them. So I learned that for my next group.
Okay, so which next group?
The next group of stepchildren.
Oh, okay, so that's going to be another howdy-do here,
course.
I hope, on Love Letters. I've already got so many people in your life that I'd like to write love letters to. My goodness. Now, you were married to Bert for 10 years?
Yes,
you
and he was about? Diagnosed with cancer.
After how long?
After about 9 years and 3 months.
That must have been just horrible.
We went to Mexico, and we came back with the usual Montezuma's revenge,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't get over it.
That's how you knew something?
And so I thought, this is strange, because this was a man who could eat anything mm-hmm. and not have any problem. We had been to Mexico many times before. I always got Montezuma's revenge. He never got
mm-hmm.
it. So this time he got it. We had been with my parents, and they thought he didn't look well. They thought he looked puffy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, before you finish on this, because I do want to hear about it, and I think everybody should know about how adaptable and fluid you are in this life. How did your mother get to love him?
She just had to be with him. So after we had been married a year, she came and to California and spent time with us. She actually stayed in our home.
Mm-hmm.
And
your dad?
And my father mm-hmm. also. And Bert was a charmer. He absolutely...
But had you been in touch with... I mean, this wasn't a rift.
Yeah, so this was the funniest part of the story. Yes, they didn't want to meet him
uh-huh.
again for a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, because they wanted to make sure the marriage would work.
But they were still in touch with you.
They were in touch with me.
Uh-huh.
And I had moments when I called... I didn't want to call in tears and say, mm-hmm. oh, my God, what have I done?
Oh.
And my mother smiled on the other end of the phone, I'm sure. But also she was empathetic, and so was my father, for what I had gotten myself into and the fact that I did love him, and now I love the kids. So
oh, okay, so I want to talk about that, too. That
so
was
a
such
bigger,
a brave thing.
Big piece.
For a 24-year-old, never been married, not much experienced woman, to marry a man with 4 children.
And to fall in love with those
yes.
kids. They were, I'd never understood why the mother left, because the kids were awesome.
Oh.
They were much better than any kids probably I would have had on my own.
Well.
So what Bert did, we traveled a lot. And so Bert would send, we went down to Carmel area, and he would send avocados and artichokes to my mother. And then he would have a picture taken. We would find the oldest man that I could sit beside. And he would take my picture, and we'd send it as a postcard. Bert and I are having a lovely time in Carmel.
So he was just impervious to your mother's.
He just charmed her along the way.
Okay.
And we sent a card like that just about every week. But
okay, so he stayed with it.
He stayed with it.
Won everybody
he was
over.
Great. He said, it is not against you. It is not against me. It is against the idea that
mm-hmm.
you basically ran away from home and you're not in the tribe anymore.
Uh-huh.
You're not in your mother's. You know, you're not
okay.
in Denver. He said, if I moved to Denver, she would like me much better.
Well, maybe so, but you also ran off with a stranger.
Exactly.
That's got to be a little scary.
Yeah.
Okay, so talk about when your mother noticed that it wasn't right, that he wasn't getting over the diarrhea here.
Yeah, so she just thought he looked, on the trip, when we first arrived in Mexico, she didn't think he looked good when we arrived.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him every day, so I didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
But when I now look back at photographs, I can see that he was not well then. So we came back, and I immediately told him he should go to a doctor, mm-hmm. which, of course, for him, he had a very high tolerance to pain. Mm-hmm. So he didn't not feel pain. And so he finally agreed to go to the doctor, which happened to be the night I was giving a talk in Palo Alto to the Junior League, a talk on fashion. And he came to the head of the room, and I saw him there, and I knew something was, that it was not good. And he told me, he said, tomorrow morning they're going to take my stomach out.
Oh, my.
So he said, they think I have stomach cancer. And so stomach cancer is kind of like pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. It's not one you could recover from. So Stanford Hospital was just marvelous. They took his stomach out. He was great. I wasn't doing so well. And the kids were all with me, mm-hmm. and they said, you know, the diagnosis for him is 3 to 6 months if he's lucky. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do radiation. We're going to do chemotherapy. All those things were very invasive at the time that they did it way back.
And by this time, the children felt like yours. I mean, they knew that they had you to rely
yes,
on.
Yes, they were. They were mine. Mm-hmm. You know, they were wonderful kids, and we had a great family. So this was 1983, and 1983 was, you know, not as easy with chemo, et cetera.
Right.
He did radiation for 2 months, and it was so horrible for him. He said, you know, if I'm going to die anyway, this is not worth it because I'm sick all the time.
Oh.
So he continued to go to work every day, and we had family events, and I could see that he was failing by the minute. And he used to tease me because I used to be attracted to fur coats. And I said, if you're an older man and I'm a younger woman, I need a fur coat. He said, on our 10th wedding anniversary, you can have a fur coat. So he said, okay. So what I didn't know is that while he was out on his outings as a sick person, he and Becky were picking out fur coats for me.
Oh.
So that on our 10th anniversary, whether he was there or not, I would have a fur coat. So the fur coat arrived after he passed away. And he died 3 months after the diagnosis. He was diagnosed, he died in July of 1983.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a devastating thing for the whole family.
Oh, my goodness,
not an
I can
easy
imagine.
Thing. And I was 34 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I still had to put his kids through college.
Yes.
And also all the typical things a mom does.
How many were living at home then at that point?
Two.
Oh, uh-huh.
So we had Mike and Tom who were still at home. Mike was going to Foothill College, and Tom was just about to start.
And how old was your grandson at this point?
Pete was high school.
Oh, okay.
But he had his parents, so he didn't live with us anymore. Becky remarried.
Mm-hmm.
So
I have a suggestion. We're just about out of time.
Okay.
And we haven't been able to talk to about love letters, which is, of course, what this is about.
Yes.
And I know that every one of life's experiences has within it the seeds of a love letter. And it's just endless. I'm not going to be able to say who gets your love letter today, only because we don't have time. But I want to do something that I've never done. I'd like to do this in a two-part series with you.
All right.
Will you come back and talk more about you and your second marriage, but I also want you to talk about your life as a fashion consultant and why it is that you have 200 wigs, which you did tell me about when we first met, and I knew that would be a whole other life, how you go about this. So will you just come back and finish this with me?
I would love any chance to be with you again.
Thank you so much. This is just so inspiring, the story of a young woman who has taken on a ready-made family and continued with it.
Thank you.
You're still close with the children.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
They're my kids.
They're your kids. Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I'll see you soon.
I look forward to it.
Perfect. I want to just remind you that even though we didn't do this here, the writing of a love letter, if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, every love letter is a special occasion. And I am personally eager to find out who would get your love letters today.
Shall I tell you?
Yes, if you have one in mind, tell me right now quickly and we'll talk about it later.
I would give my love letter to Becky, the oldest daughter of Bert.
Okay, thank you. All right, we're going to look forward to that. Thank you, dear. I will talk to you soon.
Okay.
And until next time, this is Janet Gallen and Susie Woodward Morris saying goodbye, because she'll be right back.
Bye.
Goodbye.